Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, bring you the amazing stories of people who answered the call to unlock their potential and taken control of their own success with authenticity, creativity, persistence, and resilience. Close Up Radio special guests share their knowledge and wisdom so you, the listener, can live the most empowered life possible. Close Up Radio. And now, here's today's host, Doug Llewellyn.
Well, thank you so much. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Close Up Talk Radio. It is indeed nice to have you with us today. As you know, we talk to people from all walks of life and all kinds of professions on these broadcasts. They're fascinating. I love chatting with people who do different things and come from you know, different areas in the world of business or whatever. Today, we're going to focus on and speak with a retired police officer, a former retired police lieutenant from the city of Los Angeles. I never get the opportunity to interview many police officers, and I'm really looking forward to this. I think it should be most amazing and most interesting. I really honor police officers, and I think it's a scary profession to be in right now. And I worry about police officers when I see them. You know, I have no fear of police officers. A lot of people do, but I don't. But in any event, our guest name is Patricia Blake. Those who know her call her Patty, so we're going to call her that. She is a retired lieutenant in the police department from L.A., and she has written a book, and the book is about to come out. She's almost finished with, well, basically she's finished. The cover is being printed now, and the book will be coming out within the next matter of weeks. So we're going to talk about that and about her experience of actually writing a book. There are not many police officers I know that actually envision themselves becoming an author, you know, after they are a police officer. But this is one who has done it, and I, quite frankly, I'm excited to talk to her. She points out that her book, Touched by the Hand of God in the City of Angels, is a personal account of the powerful emotional side of police work and its impact on officers and on families. She says she realized her story could make a difference with people who find themselves in times of terror, stress, or desperation. It's important for them to know that there is a higher power that care and it's there for you. She knows it makes a difference in people's lives, and she hopes that they gain new insight into perspective on being a police officer. She believes most of us are there, that is, most police officers are there for the right reason. It has required 3 years of intense work on her part to put this book together. And she said when writing a book, every word needs to be the right word, not just any word, the right word. And she goes into some great detail on incidents that made a huge impact on her and things that no person should ever have to witness. She was inspired to become a police officer following a traumatic near-death experience with her first husband as a 19-year-old. She experienced a spiritual miracle, as she put it. God touched her on the shoulder and instantly took away the terror and the grief and filled her with an incredible spirit of peace and love, knowing that his presence was there. She says there is a greater spirit of love and peace watching over us. And since that fateful day, she says God has touched her and guided her throughout her life to protect the innocent and the vulnerable. And she would go on to serve as a police officer for 33 years. So it was a calling. She wanted to make a difference to help the children. And she loved working the streets and out in the field because it's so fluid. And as a police officer, you make a difference. She was incredibly blessed to work different assignments, and she always saw them as a chance to learn how to be a better leader and to make a difference, not only to the community, but with the officers themselves. So that's a little bit about Patty's story. We're going to be talking to her now. Remember, she's written this book. We'll get information on what the book is about. And I just think this is a great opportunity for all of us to learn what it's like to be a police officer. It's not easy. Patty Blake. Patty is, as I said, she's been with the L.A. Police Department, but she lives in Nevada right now. And it's a lovely day where you are. A lovely morning, Patty. How are you? Welcome. Nice to have you with us.
Oh, Doug, I want to first express a deep thank you for all your support for the law enforcement officers. They have a hard job, and they want to do the right thing, and they're there to protect you. So and anyone who's in need. So, and the book itself actually has a spiritual side, which, as Doug, you touched on, I had that spiritual experience when I was 19 years old, and I was married for 4 months with someone who came back from 2 tours of Vietnam. So he was a military warrior, but he came back with some PTSD, which is not really, it wasn't understood in the early 70s. There's a lot more depth of understanding and research in today's world, but he had depression and drinking problems, but he ended up killing himself with a rifle. So that was extremely devastating for me because, firstly, I thought that, you know, why didn't he kill me first? Because he was so deeply depressed. So it was a miracle to me. My mind was plunging, and it was like I'm in the back seat of the car with my parents driving me back home after the incident, after the interview with the investigators. And I wasn't asking for any help or protection from spiritually, because I thought that the Lord was too busy taking care of the whole world. I never heard a voice, but I felt the presence, and I felt a hand on my right shoulder. And instantaneously, all the grief, the terror, the pain was taken away, and I was filled with this feeling of peace, and it encompassed me. And I knew that it was a higher being that cared and was protecting me. So that was very meaningful. Thank you. But I think I was born from childhood to be a protector, because I was the oldest of four. I had one brother and two sisters. So there was four of us. And we were all 1 year apart. And the Dalles, Oregon, on the Columbia River, living in an orchard field out in the country. And my father instilled in me, you will watch over and protect your brother and your sisters. And I took that to heart. And but I also had a strong sense of justice. My baby sister, I was 5 years old, my baby sister bit me and drew blood. My father was there, happened to see it, and he ordered me bite her back, and I just could not do it. I stood up to my 6'4". Yeah, stood up to my huge father, and I said no at the age of 5. So, and this was the old days where, old school. Well, he kicked it and hit me and threw me up the stairs. And then to solidify the lesson, he bit my baby sister himself.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
I was pretty strong-willed even as a child. And when I was 5, my first day of kindergarten, my mother never told me that part of the whole plan was she was going to leave. I thought she was going to stay with me. My mother never left any of the four kids with family or even church back then. And so when I saw my mother leaving out the back door of the classroom, I was horrified. And the teacher grabbed me by my arms when I was trying to run to my mother. And I was infuriated. How dare she put her hands on me? So I twisted away from her grip, and I turned around, and I kicked her as hard as I could in the leg, and then I ran to my mom. So my mother learned from that and started leaving the other kids with with friends, with family. But the teacher didn't have a sense of humor about it, and she kicked me out of my first day of kindergarten.
So. I'm surprised you remember kindergarten. I know I went to kindergarten, but boy, I don't remember much about it. That's a long, long time ago. Let me talk to you a little bit. The experience with your husband, as you point out, that you were 19 years old when that happened, right? I mean, you were young, really young.
I had just turned 19. I might have been 18.
Just turned 19.
Yeah.
So at that point, I guess the question is, at what point did you decide that you wanted to, you know, join the police department? You weren't there at that point, right?
No. I actually, and my family moved up to Port Louis, Washington. That was where my first job was with the military as a civilian. And eventually, when I got married the second time, we ended up in L.A. because my second husband became a Los Angeles police officer. And he would come home with stories about the job in the field. And I'm thinking, I could do that, only I could do it better. because I had a sense of compassion and empathy for the victims. And, you know, I just had this sense of justice. And I wanted to be a protector. So that's, but I think God put it in my heart to be a protector. I have a picture, a black and white picture when I'm when I was 5 years old, where I've got a ponytail and a t-shirt on, and I've got a gun in each hand, a toy gun, the pistols, and it was basically, we used to play cops and robbers and catch the bad guy. So I always just had this sense of I'm catching the bad guy. So
how about that? So you kind of you two became like Blue Bloods, right? Like the television series, a husband and wife together on the police department.
Oh, right. We divorced after that because but I had a boy and a girl. I've got two children that are adults now. One is San Antonio Police Department, and my daughter is in Minnesota. She's a veterinarian. So,
okay.
Let's talk about your
experience on the LA Police Department. When you joined the force in LA, when was that? Were you back in the 80s, the mid-80s? Would that be about right?
This is kind of interesting history about females on the job, and I don't want to make it, female differentiate. But there was, at the time, in 1983 when I came on the job, there had just been a court ruling called the Fanchon Blake lawsuit against the city of Los Angeles to support females on the job and minorities. So before that lawsuit, there were police women. The category of police women, which was a different category than policemen. Even the badges back then, before 1981, said policeman, or it would say policewoman. And there was only, so when I came on the job, there's only about 150 or 175 females. Most of them were not in the field at that time. And they couldn't, and before the lawsuit, they couldn't promote past sergeant. So that opened up it broke that barrier so that females were equal or had the same potential to promote and be successful in law enforcement. So,
well, you obviously, it worked for you because you became, later on, you became a lieutenant. So you rode, you got up beyond that sergeant barrier. What did, what various positions did you hold in the police department? Like, what did you do? Did you ride the beat, in a car or what? Explain a little bit.
When I started out, my probation was Foothill, and then I worked Rampart Division, which was a very tough, hardcore division for 10 years, and very challenging, and I loved it because I just excelled in learning how to set up a perimeter, how to broadcast and be effective and efficient and catch the bad guys. So I loved that part of it. And I became one of the first two female training officers at Rampart, and then later on the first female senior lead officer. Senior lead officers work directly with community members and with neighborhood watch programs and solving entrenched gang problems and narcotics problems. I did building abatements and worked directly with the community. And then I promoted to sergeant. And then from that point on, I basically loved working as a supervisor of small teams with a special problems unit, and then eventually transferred out to San Fernando Valley. I had a gang unit in Van Nuys, and then when I promoted to I was a department researcher. And so that's part of where I learned some writing and organizational written skills. And I was a complaint investigator for a while, then promoted to lieutenant. And in the valley, I had the gang unit, and then eventually I was in charge of a detective's floor at West Valley, and had a parolee team that we would focus on parolees, and I always went out with them to make sure that to oversee everything, make sure that we had a debriefing, that we had a plan, that if whatever resources that we needed, like calling in the air unit, and it was very challenging, but very rewarding. I always focused on mentoring and keeping the officers safe and keeping the community safe. So,
well, it sounds like you have had quite a career. It's interesting because I lived in L.A. and I obviously lived in the areas where you were on duty many times. I know the Valley very well. Most people who know Los Angeles know what is meant by the Valley. It's the San Fernando Valley. Let me ask you a couple of questions. Well, I have a bunch of questions, but did you find that people treated a woman police officer differently than a man police officer? What do you think?
Oh, good question. Actually, with my partners, when I first came on the job, the females weren't embraced with open arms, but most of the guys came around to understanding that we're just as capable as our male counterparts. So most of this challenge did not come from the male police officers, but some of the community members, like when I became a female senior lead officer, some of the neighborhood leaders at Rampart kind of doubted that I could handle that tough job. And then, of course, they learned that I was very caring. I always returned every phone call. I always tried to problem solve and communicate. So they appreciated that. And when I promoted, they were protesting with the captain. They wanted to keep me there, but the policy, when you promote, you generally get transferred to another division. So, but it was rewarding to work with the community.
I guess it's interesting when I asked you about treating a woman police officer differently. You answered from the point of view of the male police officers. How did they treat you? they treat you.
Right.
I hadn't thought about that aspect. I was asking you about the general public that you came into contact with. If, people that you are apprehending or discussing or questioning or whatever, did they treat you differently than they do, a male police officer? How did you find that? Were they nicer to you or what?
It depended on the situation. I think with the gang members and the parolees that I came in contact, any police officer is being sized up for their strengths and their weaknesses. They're being assessed by the gang member just as much as simultaneously the police officer is assessing the situation. So it works in reverse too. But actually, I always got into situations that were interesting and challenging, for the most part, the community accepted the field police officer.
Did you ever have to fire a weapon?
Yes, in Rampart Division in 1987, I encountered a suspect on a field stop. I was a L car, that's a one-person car. My partner was in court. And down at MacArthur Park, the suspect attacked. Well, he basically rushed towards me. I was behind the car door, and he tried to stab me with a knife. All of my tactical skills and my training came into play. You only have time to react to the situation, you only have seconds.
Yep.
So fortunately, I didn't get hurt, but it was, and by the way, that's where I really recognized and realized the impact of the police work on my family, because when I went home that night after the interviews and the investigation, and my husband at the time had already told the children and didn't talk to me about it, so I was a little annoyed that he had told my children. My daughter said to me, she had a class tour set for the next day at the Los Angeles Children's Museum, and she told me, I'm not going down there. There's bad guys down there. They want to hurt me.
Yeah.
And I told her, I will talk to the teacher. I'll go with the class. I will attend it with you, and you will be safe. So.
Well, Patty, there's so many questions we have, but we're quickly running out of time. I want to talk to you a little bit about why you decided to sit down and write this book. The book, again, is called Touched by the Hand of God in the City of Angels. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about the book. What's it all about?
So, based on my faith and I believed it was a calling for me to become a police officer. And God guided my path and put it on my heart for this calling. But for 40 years at work, you don't talk about politics. You don't talk about religion. And you're basically a professional when you wear the badge. And to me, the badge is a symbol of public faith and public trust. But I felt compelled. And now I never heard the voice of God, but there were times at night when I would wake up and I would get this feeling. And for example, when I was writing the book, I felt that God wanted me to share with other people my faith and give them hope and that someone, a higher presence, is there to protect them and care for them in their time of need. So I felt that God called me to put in writing what I had experienced, so to share with others. And so for 40 years, I had not shared it with anyone, including my family. And near-death experiences, I felt that it was like a near-death experience. But back in 1972, no one had researched near-death experiences. And if you study it, every individual that has experienced, leaving their body and seeing the angels or the heaven or whatever their experience is, there's commonalities. And when they are called back to continue their life, it's because they have unfinished business or children to raise and that kind of thing. But so for 40 years, I hadn't talked about it with even family and friends, and God called and compelled me. He put it on my heart to put it in writing.
Okay. So there's a lot of that experience, plus a good bit, I assume, of your experiences as a police officer. Would that be right?
Oh, absolutely, yes. It was very it's different every day. We had
yeah.
fluid situations and situations where I wanted to catch a bad guy and I would have certain information, and I was pretty tenacious and I would develop a plan, so focusing on safety for the officers with communication. It's very fluid in the field.
Tell me, I get the impression being a police officer today is a lot different than what it was, 10 or 15 years ago, certainly 20 years ago, 30, when you joined the police force. It's changed,
mm-hmm.
hasn't it?
Thank you for touching on that. That's the second part of why I wanted to put these words on paper, because I believe God is watching over all of our heroes and the frontline responders, including the firemen, the police, emergency medical paramedics, and importantly, our military warriors. And so God is protecting us and shielding us. And at the same time, God calls on us to become the protector and shield the innocent and the vulnerable. So it comes in different forms and shapes, the protection.
Well, listen, I think it's great you have taken the time to do this. You said it took 3 years of work. You've worked on this very diligently, and every word is really very careful. Words have meaning, and obviously you've been very careful about which words to use in the book. It sounds very promising. I really look forward to getting a copy of this and reading it. It's going to be coming out shortly. Again, the title is Touched by the Hand of God in the City of Angels by our guest Patricia Blake. And it sounds pretty amazing. So and there aren't many opportunities to get a book about the inside story of like you have. So, Patty, thank you for taking the time to do it. Go ahead.
I wanted to share with you, putting the words down on paper, I didn't realize at the time that I had removed my emotion from the incidents I was writing about. And a friend of mine, an ex-partner that was reading it, he's like, where is your feeling? Where is your emotion? What were you thinking at the time? And I'm like, oh,
yeah.
My gosh. I had fallen into that professional leadership role. And I had to go back and put the emotion.
Put it in?
Insert the emotion. Yeah.
I'm sorry, we've run out of time for this broadcast. Hopefully we can talk again sometime, okay? I wish we had more,
but we have
10 seconds left.
Thank you.
You are very welcome.
We hope that you have an empowered and productive day.
Computer Demon.